Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Well, hello, everybody. It's Thursday. It's time for the Duff and Quarters podcast, the second edition of this week. It'll be the last home and away edition of this year before we gear up for finals. It is the man with very, very small hands, Glenn Quartermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times and the son of a darkened shearer, Mark Duffield, the senior football writer of the West Australian. Quarters, the AFL just never stops giving. They never stop giving.
Selfless organisers. They have frozen finals prices.
I mean,
what a selfless gesture.
They've got generosity oozing out of every pore.
Why would you hike the prices anyway in a season where the games are shortened? We've got that's second-rate final series, I'm going to say it, in Queensland.
Where there's a pandemic on the loose.
People have got no money and you're freezing. Thank you. That's very selfless. Thank you.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, well played. I would have thought it was probably just listening to the market, but anyway.
Yeah, it's a chance for some good PR, let's call it that. But I think it's falling on deaf ears.
Some heavy spin. I would have thought there's more spin on that one than a Shane Warne leading at Calcutta on the fifth day.
I agree with you. Yeah, so anyway, and some more action in the parliamentary inquiry. We can cue the Godfather music in here, can we, Duff?
I don't know whether we'll do that.
No.
Yes, of course, Trevor Nisbet forced to dispute, I guess, the assertion that he is known in football circles as the Godfather. The question put to him by Tony Booty at the Public Accounts Committee hearing yesterday. I thought it was a little bit mischievous of Tony to put that. I mean, certainly there's been a clear allegation from West Coast inaugural coach and former Director General of Sport and Recreation in WA, Ron Alexander, that there is a ruling class in WA footy. And I think Ron actually used the term underbelly. I think he regrets that term a little bit. I think ruling class is more what he was trying to put across. He wants a more transparent system. He wants more democratic ways of electing commissioners. He also wants more democratic ways of electing club boards, which I'm not sure about, I have to say. Mm. I think that what supporters want is successful teams. And I think that there's no – we'll put it this way. It's hard to be more successful than West Coast have been. So,
winning a flag every year, which we know you can't do. So, yeah, I agree. The most successful team in terms of finals played since the advent of the national competition.
Fremantle actually had two member-elected club board members. They stopped the practice this year, actually, and the reason they stopped the practice is because there was very little interest from members in voting. I think the last time they had an election, they had about a 7% turnout. Mm. When they scrapped the practice in favour of a members' forum, so they basically had a 30-person members forum. They're going to up it to 40 or 50 to get feedback from people and get, you know, sort of meaningful feedback from a diverse range of members as to how they think the club is tracking and ways they think the club could be better. One person who used to be a board member, actually, Docker Dave Garrick, stood up at the annual members meeting at the Fremantle Town Hall. It was a very packed meeting in very hot conditions. I went down and watched the opening of it before the press had to leave. He put it to the meeting, basically was protesting the end of member-elected board members, found complete lack of support.
So couldn't even get it seconded.
So the people at that meeting who cared enough about the club to go to that meeting, basically, I think they want well-run clubs and I think they want successful football
teams.
You tend
to turn up if it's a crisis meeting, don't you? They do.
Well, there was a big crowd there.
Okay.
And obviously they were meeting, you know, Justin Longmire, the new coach. They were meeting Simon Garlick, the new CEO.
Crisis or a novelty? if it's just a standard meeting, I think you tend to struggle to get the numbers there because, as you say, people just want successfully and well-run
clubs. And they're happy to leave the clubs to their own devices, I think, in those cases. West Coast, you know, it's interesting. Like, there is a complete lack of democracy at West Coast. There's no doubt about that. But I don't have West Coast members ringing me and saying, I demand to have a vote on the board. I might have had a handful of them during the drug scandal.
Yeah.
But I don't remember many.
I reckon I had a handful of them with this year, which I found a bit tasteless, actually. We'd given – and that was mainly about the rights memberships and during COVID.
Yeah.
I think really everyone needed to realise that it's a difficult year, and I think this year your membership – and most 99% of them have stuck fat with the club, which is great. So I think you need – this year more than ever you need to support your club.
Well, West Coast have 100,000 members.
Yeah.
And Fremantle have 51,000.
Remarkable effort this year, 100,000.
It is. And West Coast is a record. And Fremantle's is only 3,000 or 4,000 off their record. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty good turnout and a pretty good response from the two clubs this year. And I think we will see a good response next year based on the way West Coast has been and the way Fremantle is finishing the season.
I think for the fact that there's 10 clubs in Victoria, I think that the downturn in membership there is not too significant.
Yeah.
So they could claw that back, I think, pretty quickly. So I think across the board, South Australia's the same. Across the board, I think memberships this year generally, in the rusted on states particularly, I think we've shown how much they love the game and how much they know that support is required at the moment.
Yeah, I think they know it's important to the future of their clubs, and they don't want their clubs, you know, tens of million dollars in hock to the AFL, which, let's face it, that whole AFL line of credit, the $600 million, that was all about being able to loan money to clubs to get them through this crisis and have the clubs pay them back. No one wants to owe the AFL $20 million at the end of the year, because $20 million is a lot to have to pay back.
So where are we going to end up with this inquiry? For mine, we're going to end up with a different voting process for the West Australian Football Commission.
I think there'll be recommendations. Now, the question is, can they enforce the recommendations? You know the litmus test for this quarter's? Grant Dorrington sent an email to Jeff Dennis, the CEO of Swan Districts, basically urging the club not to lodge papers with the Public Accounts Committee's inquiry. Now, Grant Dorrington, my understanding, well, his term is up at the Football Commission. I don't know yet whether Grant is going to stand again. If we see a new commission and Grant Dorrington is still on that commission, I think we need to ask the question, is there a need for change here? Because really, Doro has been a great servant of WA footy. He's been a long-time servant. You know, he's not a bad person. He's been a very good person for WA footy, but that was a monumental faux pas, and that should cost him his spot on the commission. Apart from the fact that the commission needs fresh ideas and younger people who are capable of taking the game forward.
Yeah.
And I think it also, and West Coast won't like this, but it also needs slightly less of a blue and gold hue to it. It's a very West Coast commission at the moment.
And I think it needs some decentralisation in terms of where it goes fans out to the grassroots, because there's just an over-governance at the moment of grassroots footy. The clubs need to be engaged. The clubs need to represent themselves a bit better. And I know because I'm a part of that grassroots community. So
absolutely. And I think they need to get on board with the Waffle Clubs. There's a complete breakdown in trust between the commission and the Waffle Clubs at the moment. That needs to be fixed. Now, I've had a few people, you know, a couple of people at AFL clubs and a couple of people at the commission say, well, we can't trust the Waffle Clubs. You cannot build a good system when you're assuming incompetence. The commission's role is basically governance and compliance, as very well allocated by Jeff Dennis when he and other Waffle Clubs fronted the commission. And basically, if the commission's not getting that done, the commission's not doing its job. And really, when we talk about problems in WA footy, we're not targeting and criticising West Coast and Fremantle here. We're targeting and criticising the commission. I think it's a failure of the commission that they're not getting more money out of West Coast. I think it's a failure of the commission that they have no trust with the Waffle Clubs, and I think it's a failure of the commission that more money isn't filtering down to grassroots and community footy.
Agree. Now, a couple of other issues. So we're having a virtual Brownlow Duff Sunday, October 18.
Am I the chance to virtually win one then?
Well, you can win one if you like. You can have one struck up at the Perth Mint if you wish. So Lachie Neale will be presented with his Brownlow in a virtual sense. I think Gil McLachlan will be reading the votes out.
So you're calling it, eh?
Lachie I'm calling wins. It. Yeah, I'm calling it. There have been odds-on favourites in the past who haven't won. I think Malcolm Blight might have been one in the year before he won it. But, look, I just think Lachie Neale's he'd be a fair bit ahead right now of probably Travis Boak, maybe Christian Petracca. But, you know, I don't think there's going to be a Smokey come over the top.
Is there anyone else you can see troubling those in the finish?
Nope.
Not the Bont?
No, not the Bont. I had him pre-season, so I'd love to have him win the Brownlow, but I don't think the Bont can. The Bont will poll well, always does. I think Lockie's a fair way ahead. They've had a good year too, Brisbane.
Can anyone take votes off Lockie that
yeah,
you're seeing?
Players can take votes off him, but I think he's been – when he's – just the way he's played, he's gone – he was a great player as it was, and he's risen to a new level this year. So I think in their emphatic victories, he's been the beacon who's really stood out. I mean, he's just been a class above – a really good midfield. So I don't think so. I think he'll get a lot of threes.
I tend to agree with you. I think there was a lot of hype about Lachie being a better player last year than he was at Fremantle, which I thought was a load of hogwash. He was a two-time Best and Fairest winner at Fremantle in a team that boasted a guy who ended up winning two Brownlow medals or has won two Brownlows so far. But I think he has gone to a different level.
It's clean as a hospital floor, isn't he? He's just so clean.
Doesn't fumble.
No.
And interestingly enough, they've just started tagging him. So Sydney put a hard tag on him with Clark.
Oh, yeah.
In the last game.
Getting inside a few heads, Clark, isn't he?
And it did affect his output.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if that's something that other teams
of course they
target
would.
In the finals.
If it's worked 1 week, maintain it. So Woosher coaches for the last time this weekend, Essendon v Melbourne on Saturday. 368 games as coach of West Coast and Essendon, 187 wins, 178 losses. That's a 51.2% winning ratio. Not bad, Duff. I think that puts him in the top echelon of coaches. Not the very top, but puts him in he's a winning coach. So
well, don't forget he had that year at Essendon after the drug saga where they basically ran a second tier team around. So
I think, and whether you think he's done a good job in the past, clearly Essendon is underachieving this year, but we've suggested in the past that Woosh is really not coaching this year from the coaches. That's Ben Rutten's job this year. He's taking all the heat, Woosher. And I think if you're an Essendon fan, you look at John Worsfold's role when he went to that club and it was absolutely on its knees. And he's dragged it back into the conversation.
Well, they played finals last year.
Yeah, of relevance. And also he's introduced a bit of integrity back to that club. So I think if you're an Essendon fan, you thank John Worsfold as he exits the door. He's done what he was asked to do at that footy club. So well done, Woosher.
Yeah, I agree. Look, there's an interesting thing going on at Collingwood at the moment, isn't there? There's a few past players getting involved.
At Essendon.
There's a few past players getting involved. You know, Dean Wallace has been quite outspoken. Matthew Lloyd's been quite outspoken. Be careful what you wish for, boys. At North Melbourne last year, Brad Scott said to them, I think we need to have a rebuild. Clearly that wasn't music to the ears of a few past players who'd had premiership success, and premiership success basically built around one all-time great player, Wayne Carey. And they viewed, you know, this business of having to go back and do a rebuild as absolute hogwash, and look at where they are now. So they have a young coach in Reece Shaw. He's really struggling in the role, and they look a long way off at quarters.
They do. Scott Pendlebury, so he will pass Tony Shaw's record as games played for Collingwood. He will pass Nathan Buckley's record as games captain for Collingwood in the same match. Where does Pendlebury fit as Collingwood's greatest ever player? For me, I mean, there have been many great players there, but I've got him and Buckley as the top two, and I've got Pendlebury perhaps nudging him now.
So 314th game for the Pies and 162nd game.
This is remarkable. And I'll ask you a question.
Captain.
I'll ask you a question. When has he erred off the field? Have I missed something? Has he been? He has been a model citizen, Pendlebury.
You know, when Buckley succeeded Mick Malthouse as coach, of course, in a Kirribilli agreement like the one that is unravelling at Essendon at the moment, and obviously it didn't go down too well at Collingwood either, with Mick Malthouse leaving, I think, with a lot of angst and bitterness about what had happened. And you tend to get that when you basically tell a bloke he's going to be leaving after he's just coached the team into a grand final. And that's a year on from having won a premiership. I think Malthouse spoke at a breakfast that I attended, and he was talking about Pendlebury, and he was talking about Dane Swan.
Yep.
And he was talking about Buckley's challenge in managing the two. And he said, Pendlebury exists to be a better footballer. He said everything he does, everything his makeup is about getting better as a player, being the best footballer he can possibly be. He said, as for Dane Swan, he says, I love Swanee, but he said, you know, all your hope is that he turns up at the right ground with the right uniform at the right time. So his point being completely different personality, but I think what that underlines is just what a complete pro Pendlebury has been. Probably would have been a very good basketballer.
He was a good basketballer. He had to make the choice as a junior between basketball and footy. Fortunately, well, if you're a basketball fan, unfortunately. But
so, Josh, why – we'll bring you in on this one ahead of the mailbag. Why do basketballers tend to have such great spatial awareness when they make the transfer to footy?
Well, I this is one of my pet peeves for the AFL, is poaching all these talent that Australian basketball brings through. Well, firstly, the height, that's what they target them. It's always tall players. But it's the lateral quickness. Everything you do in basketball you train for is about moving sideways. And it's all about split-second movement. So whenever you speak to basketball players, when they go to the game, like Hugh Greenwood and stuff like that, it's they see it as slow. Like in space, it's actually slow. If they can get the kicking figured out, that's another story. But they actually think it's actually the split-second decisions in basketball is potentially quicker.
Which we know that Pendlebury just excels in that area. Terry Wallace was another outstanding junior basketballer. He might have played with the Nunawading Spectres in their squad before he went on to play VFL. So
he was good in traffic too, wasn't he?
He was very good in traffic. Pendlebury would be one of the best I've ever seen in traffic, and I think he's still playing great footy. He's got two or three left in him.
Oh, I reckon at least two.
Yeah.
It's like time stands still.
Yes.
Around Pendlebury. And it's like the other players don't want to run in and tackle him.
Yeah.
Which I just find, like, he doesn't look quick, but the game seems to slow down around him.
But all the great players have that effect. The game slows down, but him in particular, Pendlebury, and he just doesn't seem to be, it hasn't hit him yet. The cliff's he's nowhere near that cliff yet.
So you know what, quarters? So Collingwood beat West Coast at Optus Stadium in 2019. It was a great victory. I think it was a less than a kick. Pendlebury played in that game. They played West Coast without Pendlebury this season and got absolutely flogged. And they got picked off by the Eagles interceptors. And, you know, Treloar was playing. But Treloar's kind of like a hard-charging, straight-ahead mid. So's Taylor Adams. The guy that gives them that sideways dimension that changes the direction of the game.
And picks the targets. And if anyone's able to break through that West Coast and avoid their intercept marking, it's him.
And that, I reckon those two results underline as much as anything what Scott Pendlebury brings to the table as a footballer.
Agree. We should do some tips tonight. 5:10 p.m. at Metricon Stadium, North Melbourne v West Coast. Do you give North any chance?
Look, I believe they're out on the ground. They've started early.
They need to.
They're going to try and they're hoping to take shots at goal and not miss.
Look, in that case, it'll be close stuff because they needed to start yesterday.
If they miss one, of course, there'll be no one to kick the ball in and they'll have to wait for West Coast to show up. But provided they keep kicking straight, they might be able to get a bit of a head start. No, I don't. In a nutshell, what I saw of North last week, I was a bit surprised by how bad they were. And that's not to take anything away from Freo, but, you know, Fremantle, as good as Freo have been in the back end of this season, and I give them enormous kudos, and I think they've got a lot to look forward to. Gee whiz, North were bad last week.
I'm interested to see how West Coast front up, because we know they've got some players back and there's a debutant, but two more days to recover. So they've had a little bit of extra time, a week to recover after they had that horrendous run of five games in, 19 days,
I think it
was. So they've had a week now to recover, so they'll be feeling a little better. They've actually been able to train, which helps too. But Luke Foley makes his debut.
So I love this. So You know when a guy, when a young bloke catches your eye when he's playing in Colts or in the 18s? And
like Logan McDonald did for me at the weekend.
Exactly, and Luke Foley was that player for me a couple of years back. Yep. So I've got a really keen interest in this one. I want to see how he goes. I reckon they do too. I reckon, I don't know, you know, they haven't really had much exposed form in twos to say, oh, Luke Foley's fought his way into the team. Mm. I think they're going to put him in there and they're going to have a look and say, okay, well, how's he looking? Is he a guy we need to keep on our list, or is he a guy that needs a bit more work before he's an AFL player?
Interesting for these kids who've been playing in scratch matches, obviously not allowed to go back to the waffle. Interesting to see if it has any impact on them across the competition, because it is a year of their development that, you know, we're not sure how much they can develop inside the hub in scratch matches without any exposure.
And heaven forbid that we have another year like it. So
yes,
hopefully
heaven forbid.
This is hopefully this is all cleared up and in the rear vision mirror when we start the season next year.
So no nonsense about this, better to finish fifth or sixth and get a home final. The Eagles have to win this. They have to put themselves in a position where if the cards fall their way, they get into fourth, they get a better, they play one, you're a chance to, and it could be Port Adelaide. So they could get a go at Port Adelaide at Adelaide Oval. They've never beaten them, the Eagles at Adelaide Oval.
Well, my understanding is they're coming home anyway, Corbis. Yep. So, you know, they play tonight. My understanding is they're on a plane tomorrow. Mm. They're coming home to Perth. If they finish fourth, they go back. If they finish fifth, or they sixth, stay here and a team comes over.
Which is the most likely scenario.
Interestingly, Caroline Wilson, much respected
newsbreaker. Yes, she is. I love Caro.
From The Age.
Yeah.
Suggested it was an unfair advantage that West Coast got to sleep in their own beds for the team that comes here and plays them, assuming that they finish fifth. I think that is the greatest load of nonsense I've ever heard. And Caro, seriously, the world's smallest violin for you. Every year our teams go and play at the MCG
and
in a grand final.
Hotels,
They don't. They didn't get Collingwood to stay in a hotel in 2018. They didn't get Hawthorn to stay in a hotel in 2013 and 2015. Or Geelong, or Sydney did because they were coming from interstate. Yeah. But the point being is that
an hour on a flight.
Is it an advantage for West Coast? Yeah, it is. So is playing at home.
Yeah.
But advantage is usually with Victoria when it comes to these things. So please, don't expect any sympathy from over here. And you do have the grand final until, buddy, 11:70.
20:57, correct. So we're both tipping a comfortable West Coast win this evening.
Very comfortable.
Friday, tomorrow night, 5:50 p.m. at the Gabba. The first of what we'll call blockbusters in terms of what they mean. I mean, there's a number of games here. There'll be, depending on wins and light, there'll be some very nervous people around. St Kilda v GWS. So does St Kilda beat them with their speed and their accuracy, or does the real GWS turn up? I don't think GWS can make finals from here. I'm going St Kilda. I think they've got too much to lose. They have been tapering off, but I think there's more upside, and I'm prepared to back them here. Look, they probably had was a 15-point loss to West Coast last week. I think we've seen a side that's not playing at its best, but what we've seen of St Kilda this year I think has been a lot – the sample has been much better than what we've seen from GWS.
Okay, so I'll put it to you this. I think West Coast A-graders cooked them last week. So Nat Nui stood up, Tim Kelly stood up, Andrew Gass stood up. Obviously McGovern was having a great game, Troy's hamstring.
And then Barass.
Barass stood up in his place. Now, GWS has a lot of A-graders.
Yeah.
Does St Kilda...
less than they should have. One fewer than they should have at the moment. If he's picked.
Canelio gets picked.
Does he? How do you bring him back in after dropping him from last week, which is the most ridiculous decision I've witnessed in many a year? What sort of a statement? They were trying to make a statement by dropping the captain, and it backfired on them last week, and I just don't think – it's a really hard one to get back. If he was out of form last week, why do you play him this week?
Good question. I'm going to tip St Kilda, and I'm along the lines of you. They're too much to lose here, and I think GWS have left their run too late. I don't think they can make it.
Sort of really haven't had a run.
You know what I want to see, though? Jack Steele made his name as an elite midfielder this year playing accountably. I don't want a head-to-head situation like they left themselves in last week.
Yep.
I want Jack Steele to go to the one that they believe is the most dangerous GWS mid, which is probably Josh Kelly.
Yeah, I'd say
And I want him taken out. Not taken out Carl Dittrich style. I want him taken out, basically.
I saw Carl's last game.
I want
brutal.
I want his impact on the game reduced. So I hope they do that. I'm tipping the Saints. I do think GWS will be dangerous.
Yeah. Well,
they're always dangerous.
But you don't know who's going to turn up.
Correct.
Saturday, Essendon v Melbourne. They get a chance to win this and then see what happens. They'll be very nervous, Melbourne. Absolutely must win. Good win, a good late surge win last week with our boy Trent Rivers, magnificent late in the game. I'm going to pick Melbourne to win this. I just can't. I have no faith in Essendon at all, which is why they probably can cause an upset here, particularly against Melbourne when it really counts. But I just don't think the form and confidence is there with Essendon.
Look, if Melbourne can't get this done, I mean, seriously, hang your head in shame. Basically, you win this and the Doggies lose, you're playing finals. So get it done and then see what Fremantle brings against the Western Bulldogs on Sunday. Melbourne has to win this. Essendon's got nothing left.
No. I'm picking Melbourne too. I'm nervous about the tip though, Duff.
And you know what I hope? I hope what happens in this game is that after the game, Ben Rutten comes in and fronts the media.
Instead of Woosha having to do it every
Instead week. Of Woosha coming. So we've got one guy coaching the team, and I find it hilarious. I'm still watching these guys, particularly past players at Essendon, talk about, the mess that the season's become and what's the game style. Well, this is Ben Rutten's game style. Mm-hmm. Ben Rutten has been coaching this team since round one with tactical input from Blake Carosella, and John Worsfold has been taking the pressure for him at the post-match press conferences. Put Ben Rutten in the hot seat and say, you coach the team, you answer the questions.
What's Woosh's future be on this?
I think I'm not sure they'll be in footy next year. So I think with the reductions in the soft cap, it's going to be very difficult for either Fremantle or West Coast to afford him. I think he wants to come back to Perth. His family's back here. If we look at the turning point in Adelaide's season, do Adelaide need him now? It looked like they did in the middle of the season. Do they need him now? I'm not sure they do. Matthew Nix has been quite impressive there towards the end of the season. I'm not sure. It may have to be something else other than footy if he's back here. It may be that there's another club over there. And look,
North?
Maybe North. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe North. Hey, maybe he could go in there. But got to be careful about the price tag.
I think Shaw could do with a mentor. Whether that is a Woosha or even a Paul Ruse, I think his name's been floated with North Melbourne, but he definitely needs someone over the top.
See, I reckon Paul Ruse would cost a bit of money as well, and that's going to be the problem with these guys.
It is. With this, definitely next year going down to 6.5.
I reckon what you're going to see, Quarters, like there's a feeling that Sean Burgoyne will be sort of part coach, part player. If Eddie Betts goes on at Carlton, there's a feeling that that'll be the case there, and I reckon it'll be the case if David Mundy goes on at Freo. And you'll have these people mix and matching to try and soften the blow of the reduction in the soft cap. So can you pay – what would it take to get John Worsfold into your club? It might take $200,000 or $300,000. Can you afford $200,000 or $300,000 for a guy who wouldn't necessarily be a line coach or a hands-on daytime coach, would be more like a Neil Barmies at Richmond, a sort of an older head, a steadying influence around the footy department? Not sure.
Saturday, 3:10 p.m. Adelaide Oval. A fast-finishing Adelaide. Didn't think we were going to say that.
No.
A month back. A fast-finishing Adelaide.
Took them a while to get out of the gates.
Took them a long time to get. With a more experienced midfield running the show now and some kids giving a bit of hope for the future. Well done, Matthew Nix, for what a shocking first year of coaching it must have been when you think about not only the Adelaide transition but also COVID. And it's just been a horrible year. But well done. He's looked relatively unflustered. He might be like the duck on the pond, though. What's above water might be completely different to what's happening below water. But well done to him. I can't see Richmond losing this game. It's a must win for them. Richmond starting to build a bit of form. I think they get a couple more back this week too, Duff.
They do. So it looks like Prestia won't play until first week of finals.
He's a handy in first week of finals.
Shane Edwards and David Asprey look like they will play.
So there's two massive ins, and Shane Edwards is just not only a very experienced, very talented player, but good big-time player too, good big-game player.
So one One out, though, looks like Shai Bolton, who's been obviously one of our favourites this year, graduating from a forward into the midfield and doing a great job.
And a couple of other big outs too.
Tommy Lynch.
Tommy Lynch with a hamstring.
And of course, the record, on that. Yvonne Solder. So they're pretty confident Tom Lynch will play first week of finals.
Mm. Soldo, not so. I think he's kneecaps Soldo's next postcode, unfortunately.
ACL.
I shouldn't be flipping about that. It was a horrible-looking injury. But
it was horrible to see him walking off and see the knee move sideways underneath him. That gives me shivers.
Oh,
that does.
Yeah. Well, that's all the best for him in getting back to that team. But Lynch, obviously critical for them.
Richmond.
Oh, absolutely picking Richmond. Yeah,
interestingly, Quarters, Nix has done something that – David Teague did at the back end of last year. The old guys go into the middle. And the interesting side effect of that is that Rory Laird has been a fixture on a halfback flank for them for several years and probably one of the reasons why Bryce Gibbs hasn't played much. Mm-hmm. He's gone into the middle. They've worked out he's a gun mid and they slotted Bryce Gibbs back on the halfback flank last week and Bryce Gibbs played a bloody good game.
So he could have played there for three or four seasons.
Could have played probably 50 games over the last three seasons playing as a halfback. So,
you wonder why that's not being considered before that moment.
Well, because they lack speed too. And Rory Laird's quick. He's a great runner.
It's
interesting that it took them that time to get to that point where they thought,
presumably there's a match committee poring over everything every week. Well, there is.
Yeah.
Just can't believe they.
And asking, you know, doing the sliding door scenarios. What happens if we do this? What happens if we pull this lever? So that's one of the ones for Adelaide to ponder.
Brisbane v Carlton, 5:40 p.m. Gabba, Saturday night. Brisbane starting to look like a finals team. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Carlton starting to look not like a finals team.
But the danger here is that I don't think Carlton has had a more faithful servant than Cade Simpson. He was probably the only good thing they got out of the 2002 draft.
He's been a great player, but why? What does it say about you if it takes that to get over the line?
Yeah, no, I agree. But gee whiz.
It'd be great to see him go off with a win. I totally get that.
You'd want to play with your heart and soul.
What Cade Simpson's I'll tell you, game. With Carlton, the lingering question for me is Mackay's kicked four last week. How good could he be?
Yeah, no, they'll have a potent attack with him
straight,
and Charlie Kurnow.
If he kicks straight, that side could go anywhere.
Yeah, it doesn't. Their midfield needs a bit of work, doesn't
he? Is a good player.
Don't you reckon?
Mackay. The midfield does need a bit of work, but it's not – I mean, it's a pretty good platform there, and I think he, for me, is the biggest upside for them.
So Cade Simpson is third on the all-time games played list at Carlton. He's over the 340 mark now. Only Bruce Dool and Craig Bradley. Craig Bradley on 375, Bruce Dool on 356.
Some pretty good players there. He, thankfully, the Carlton match committee had faith in him too because I don't think he had a possession in his first two games.
No, and so the draft he was in, Quarters, was the draft that they were knocked out of because of the salary cap scandal. And I think Dennis Pagan had just been signed as coach and they kind of bailed out of the draft a bit and went for recycled players. Cade Simpson is the classic example of why you'd never give up on the draft. He was a down-the-order pick. Everyone thought he was too light and too skinny to have an impact at AFL level.
Did they get Eddie in that same draft? Maybe the year before.
I don't reckon they did. I reckon he was a different draft. But it does show you that you can get down-the-order picks that become great players. Six finals he played over the course of his career.
Shame, isn't it?
So it was a very barren time.
It's a shame.
And only two winning finals. So he was 2-4 in finals. So a really tough period in Carlton's history.
So you're picking the Blues?
No,
I'm picking Brisbane.
I'm tipping Brisbane.
You tip them at home now, don't you, the Lions?
Yeah.
You're pretty confident in picking them at home.
Yep, absolutely.
On to Sunday, Hawthorn v Gold Coast at Metricon, 11:15 a.m. I'm going to pick the Gold Coast. I think it'll be another honourable loss for Hawthorn. But the caveat I'm putting on it, we're seeing the retirement of Ben Stratton. We're seeing the retirement of Paul Puopolo. So for me, as you talk about Simpson, I say in the same breath, Stratton and Puopolo, two great servants, particularly Stratton, who, you know, he you look about the you talk about the great defenders of his era. He won't be in that conversation. But he should be in terms of first players picked and the job he does every week. He's been a really selfless player week after week. And as I said, he's been one of the probably the first player Clarko puts on the whiteboard for the Hawthorn defence because he knows whatever job he gives him, he'll get it done.
Yep.
Integral in their grand finals, in their premiership wins. Has had a great career, a boy from Margaret River. I saw there's some questions over whether someone should snap him up. Absolutely not. He's banged up. He is banged up. He's played that role where he's really sacrificed his body for the team, and I don't think he wants to play on.
Right.
I think he'd be pretty handy in an off-field role. Going down the track, though, of course, the soft cap's going to diminish those possibilities. But well done on both those players. And Pioppolo went to Hawthorn as a back pocket. Turned him into the pressure forward, and he's been a really good pressure forward for them. Probably, I think hindsight probably should have retired at the end of last year, or been retired at the end of last year. But one of Clarko's favourites, and at his height, he could take a bit of a hang, couldn't he, Pioppolo?
Yeah, he's a great free kick milker.
He was that well. Too. Yeah, yeah.
He got a few of those. If Clarko
Papley of his day.
If Clarko wanted to whinge about Tommy Papley, he wanted to look in the rear vision mirror about 2 years back. Paul Pioppolo was one of the great free kick milkers. In fact, he had the ability to drop the shoulder.
He did, didn't he?
Get the high contact and then look around the corner at the umpire to make sure the umpire had seen it. He was very good at it.
Got a kick after the siren or just before the siren to win a game on the strength of that, didn't he?
I think he did. It might have been against Adelaide.
Yeah,
I think it was. Gold Coast, for me, they need to win to frank their season, I think. And
Still think it's been a good season for Gold Coast, regardless of the result here. It would be nice to see, you're right, it would frank their season.
This would leave them with a sour taste in their mouth if they don't get this done.
Yep. Okay. Agree. Sydney v Geelong. Geelong, what did you think of last week? Did we see another more evidence that Richmond's just a peg ahead of them? Or did we see Geelong not showing their cards before what many anticipate will be the grand final?
I think a little bit of both. They were outplayed by Richmond. I've got no doubt about that. Richmond were the better team on the night. But I also thought there were a couple of levers that Chris Scott could have pulled that he didn't bother pulling. Mm. And provided they win this game, it's not going to cost them too much. They knew they were pretty much playing finals in Queensland or South Australia anyway. So provided they hold that spot in the top four, it's not going to be any significant issue for them.
We'll see Selwood and a little bloke who can play a bit called Ablett too returning this week.
Yeah, well, they're handy ins.
They are handy ins. They've managed Selwood really well, actually, to just slot him in at this time. So, you know, what a great servant Selwood's been and what a great player Ablett's been.
One of the interesting things for us is going to be obviously one of their great gifts, Geelong, has been to be able to create space around Tommy Hawkins and get him one-on-ones, which Richmond denied them.
Yes.
It's going to be hard to create space with 75,000 in the back half, as as Damien Hardwick described Sydney's back line when they'd played them. And I suspect that there might be a few hovering in red and white jumpers in the back half.
Yes, I think there might be a few bloodstained angels back there, Duff. Geelong, for me, need to win, will win.
Yep.
Final game, and maybe the most significant in terms of what could, you know, the result hinging on it. Frio v Western Bulldogs, Kazali Stadium at 4:10 p.m. I'm going to pick the Dogs. I think Frio's in pretty good form. I don't think they'll get as many inside 50s as they got last week, which led to a forward line that functioned really well, maybe the best functioning forward line we've seen for some time, certainly this season from Frio. I don't think they'll get as many opportunities. One thing that worries me about the Dogs is they're just overuse of handball. Mm. If they can get that right, that kick to handball ratio better.
So what happens if that's tropical, wet, dewy, stroke, rainy conditions in Cairns, in the tropics?
It's going to spell trouble, is why this has got upset written all over it, this game, and could cost the Dogs. Really, it's a massive game for the Dogs. They get into that bottom end of the eight, as we've discussed. I reckon, and the Eagles finish fifth, I reckon the Dogs and Collingwood are two teams that don't want to play.
I reckon you're right. I reckon West Coast would fancy a matchup with St Kilda in the first week of the finals. So I'm tipping the Dogs, but I reckon this is not far off of 50-50. this game.
Yep.
The Dogs have to win, which means, generally speaking, the teams that have to win at this end of the season tend to find a way. When the game goes on the line, they go a bit harder for a bit longer, just that human nature side of things. But, yeah, dewy conditions, they start throwing the ball around, they fumble a bit, and Frio play simple footy like they have been in recent weeks. I tell you what, this will be pretty close.
The dewy conditions, though, won't suit the Frio forward line as such, but, well, not the one we saw last weekend. What did you think of, so the three players nominated for the AFL MVP are Fife, Ryan and Tabana?
Yeah, that's about right.
I think that's right. I think Tabana's had a really good year. First year he's played every game. So he has had a good year, Tabana.
And you'd probably have Mundy and Brayshaw just back of them.
Yeah.
I reckon, this year.
I would agree with that. Ryan obviously will be selected in the All-Australian squad.
You'd hope
probably
so.
Should be, well, he will be in the All-Australian squad.
God, yeah.
We would hope he would be selected in the All-Australian team. And Fife's had another great year too. So just building into something, Freo. This is going to be a great game to watch. This is a must-watch game.
Yep. I think there'll be a few eyes glued to this on both sides of the country. All right, the last game.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, go on. You go.
Collingwood versus Port Adelaide in Adelaide, I believe. Is it Adelaide?
It is.
So who are you tipping here?
I've agonised over this. I'm going Port because it's at home. And again, once again, sitting on top of the ladder, done nothing wrong, yet people don't rate them. We talked about this Tuesday. You've got a few across the line here, but I think Collingwood's a bit of a chance here. I think I like the way their forward line. Obviously, Degoe going into that forward line's massive for Collingwood. I like the Cox form too. His form, just in creating the opportunity for those smaller forwards, I think that's a real plus for Collingwood. Treloar back into the midfield, Pendlebury's form, the milestone game for him. Won't bother him. He'll just play good footy as he does every week.
Yep.
Port Adelaide, though, I think at home, planets aligning a bit for them in terms of form. And there's a retirement there, I see, too, Duff, in the Hoff.
The Hoff, Justin Westhoff, bowing out. So he's been a really, really good player. I remember him in 2007 quarters. He basically came from nowhere and became this third forward at Port Adelaide when they had a bit of a surprise grand final experience and got absolutely flogged by Geelong in that grand final. And he's built himself into, out of a will-o'-the-wisp sort of opportunist forward, into a makeshift ruckman. He can play on the wing. He's played down back, sort of very good playing a kick behind the play. He's been a really, really good footballer for
Port Adelaide. When I first saw him, I was worried. I thought, you can't go out there. You're going to get hurt. Because there was nothing of him, was there?
No, exactly.
A gangly type of player. But you're right, he's building, what a great career he's built himself. How many games are we talking?
Oh, well, it's well over 200.
Yeah. It's up towards the 300 mark.
And the interesting thing about the Hoff is that it just, to me, it kind of lends itself more to the one list management decision I reckon Port Adelaide got wrong. And I reckon Port Adelaide's list management has been really good. They've tended to promote youth. They've tended to play youth, which has been fantastic. But I still can't understand why they let Dougal Howard go. Because to me, they're a bit short at the back. Yep. So Justin Westhoff has played 280 games. He is third on their all-time games played. The players who have played more than him are Kane Corns, 300 gamer, and Travis Boak, who's equal with him. Sorry, on 280. So, Justin Westhoff, very, very fine AFL career.
So they win, finish top, get the first final at home.
Yes, and then if all goes to plan, qualifying final at home, preliminary final at home, off to the Gabba on a one-week hit-and-run mission to bring home their second flag.
There you go. Good luck, Port Adelaide.
All right, it is time for everybody's favourite segment, Josh's Mailbag.
Hello, Newman.
When you control the mail, you control information.
Josh's Mailbag.
Hello, guys. New segment, but the same number of mailbags this week, an absolute bumper one. And from across the world, we broke into the Asian market a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, we did.
And tell you what, we are booming. We've spread into China now. We've gone from Indonesia to Japan. We've gone over to China. This is a very interesting mail from our man Damo from Xiamen, China. usual long-time listener, first-time email. I'm a West Coast fan and raised my boys to be fans even though they've never lived in WA and yet to see an Eagles game. Currently, my family and I are doing our second week of quarantine in Xiamen, China, before taking up school and work in Sanhao. I'm probably butchering that. Following 3 years in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, we're in two separate rooms, one child and one adult in each room, and we are not allowed to see each other for 2 weeks. Your podcast accompanied through dog walks through the desert and now...
through the desert?
In Saudi Arabia and now through laps of my hotel. My podcast question is, do you ever listen back to your previous pods before going on air for the next one? The reason I ask is sometimes I can't listen during a week in order or in the order, and I actually... find it enjoyable to hear your thoughts and predictions knowing what has transpired. For example, I was amused listening to Pod 40 when you're both so certain the Jedi's would beat Adelaide, knowing what actually happened. Maybe Josh can replay it. I will add this in after. On the footy side of things, my question relates to the Eagles and what I perceive as the weaknesses compared to 2018 with the transition from back half and forward half. What do you see as the biggest weakness this year? Because on talent, you could say they are actually more talented in 2018.
Injury. That will decide their fate for this year, I think, how high they can go. And much of it will fall on Elliot Yeo. He's so important to them. And I'm just not sure whether he's going to get back, Duff.
Yeah, continuity. I think what usually happens in a final series is that a team gets it all together and they carry momentum. It's very hard for West Coast to carry that momentum in. Even though they had a great win against St Kilda and even though we expect them to beat North Melbourne, Shuey won't have played for 3 or 4 weeks by the time he runs out in that first final. Yeo won't have played for 7 or 8 weeks if he gets up for the first final, and there's no guarantee he gets up at all. McGovern will have missed 3 or 4 weeks by the time he gets back for the second final, and the list goes on a little bit. That I think they've just been a bit disrupted, and I think that makes it really hard for them to be able to.
Full list and on form. Yes, they could win it, but I just worry about those injuries. I've got to throw in my favourite line. I heard this morning. I loved it on Melbourne radio. Suggestion that the only way North Melbourne could beat West Coast is if they deliberately err with their kicking and get the football on the ground more, hence, playing against West Coast superiority in the air. And then they could therefore call it the Shawshank Redemption, Duff.
Boom, boom.
I love it.
Hey guys, we've got a double booking here today. We're backed up with the Claremont Serial Killer podcast, so make sure you subscribe to both guys. So we're going to have to call it early for the mailbag, and we'll get to everyone's ones next week, obviously.
Well, good luck with your tipping. And Duff, just before we go, good to see we're both on the first page.
I was going to mention
again.
That. I had to get that in before we've both made it back onto the first page, at the bottom of the first page, but on the first page nonetheless. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you,
listeners, and we will talk to you again on Tuesday.
Whoa, before you go, producer Josh here. Remember, if you are a fan of the podcast, send us your thoughts. Do you have some big AFL ideas that just keep getting lost on your mates? Or has ISO allowed you to crack a big footy problem? Well, send us the topic you want two of Australia's most experienced and respected footy journalists to discuss. Send us your name, location, and thoughts to me at josh.garlep, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. Just make sure you chuck mailbag in the subject. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Porters podcast on the game.
You know who? It's unbelievable.